Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Anybody feeling better about themselves and or their New England Patriots? Well, today is the day to find... Oh, yes, young man, you feel better about the New England Patriots.
I do. I have you to thank.
What? You're going to blame me now?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Welcome into Patriots Playbook on a Thursday, Prediction Thursday, on Patriots.com Radio. He is PFW's Eric Scalavino, who always joins us in the opening hour of our playbook on Wednesdays and Thursdays. Negative Nancy to many of you who listen into the show throughout the course of the football season, but now you're not so negative today.
You were quite the sanguine host yesterday, and I think it's a little bit rubbed off on me. I'm starting to buy what you were selling yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
Based on what? What did I say that helped turn you around?
The fact that that they're frustrated at themselves, and this is just happens to be the perfect opponent to come in here at the right time for them to try to right themselves. And I'm starting to believe that.
Honestly, it's not rocket science here. You know, I think the Patriots are plenty pissed off at themselves for last week's performance because it was ugly, and it was ugly as it was, they still should have won it.
Mm-hmm.
This team should be 6-1. They're not. And they catch a Miami team that's reeling because they've lost 3 in a row after winning 3 straight. Coming off of a bye week, they still lost to Buffalo last week.
Yeah.
And there seems to be perhaps some dissension from the coaching staff and trickling down onto the playing surface as well. And we will speak a little bit more in depth about that with Armando Salguero, who opines on the Dolphins for the Miami Herald coming up in approximately 20 minutes. But this is an opportunity for New England to take advantage of a situation and put themselves back on track. I feel it, and I felt it from the very start of this week.
I agree with you. I do. I think it's not like they're going to score 50 points and, you know, come out gangbusters.
No, this is not going to be a Denver Broncos.
No.
Let's go 45, 48 on the board. No, this is not going to be.
No,
that.
But I don't think Brady will be as bad as he's been. I've seen some progress from the receivers. They're not dropping as many passes as they were before.
Mm-hmm.
I like the defensive adjustments in game that were made last week. That shows growth on the coaching staff, I think. I don't know.
Still, I like to see some better play calls overall from Josh McDaniels. I'm disappointed in the play call.
I'm scratching my head as to why Stephen Ridley, who's now supposedly healthy, is being limited in his role. It's not even starting anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, before he was starting and then relinquishing to Bolden and Blunt, giving them their reps. Now it's Bolden and Blunt starting and Ridley coming in and spelling them. I don't understand that. I'd like to see the offensive line block a little bit better for Tom Brady. I'd like to see him be more decisive and not hold on to the ball as long as he has in some games. But I think they'll play better this week and win comfortably.
Comfortably?
Yeah. I mean,
the spread is seven.
I think they'll win by double digits.
Yeah. I suppose that's about right, although I guess I felt like it might be a little bit more, and maybe that's just because – you know, I'm still looking at the national perception of the Patriots as opposed to what we know specifically about the team and the injuries and how they've been hindered in their progress by said injuries. So I'm a little surprised that the spread was only 7.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
I'm willing to even give you my prediction on how the game's going to unfold, John, if you want that now.
Fire away. Let's go this route because this is Prediction Thursday.
Yeah.
We are in week 7.
Yeah.
Week 7?
Yes. Week 8.
Week 8, excuse me. Yeah, we are week 8. We're past week 7. We're now in week 8. That's right, 5-2. Hello.
Yeah.
And we have yet through the previous 7 weeks to give away a yearbook. Nobody has picked an accurate score. Now, I must admit, I have not picked an accurate score myself, although I've missed by 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
I think I picked a game where the Patriots were a field goal shy of me getting the exact score. That's as close as I've come.
It's tough to do.
I've had some others that have also come within a field goal.
Yeah.
And I think I've had one actually for a game a couple of weeks ago that came within 1 point, both Patriots and opponent. I think it was the week before the Bengals game. So all I'm saying is we've had some closes.
Yeah.
But closes don't count.
No.
So you got to think about it. Let's give the phone number. 855-PATS-500. Toll free. Anywhere you're listening to us. 855-PATS-500. Or the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. Couple of numbers you can ring through on right now. Send your prediction as well to webradio@patriots.com via email. Hit me up on Twitter, @JRBroadcaster. And by the way, I must thank the 20 or so that have climbed aboard on Twitter since this time yesterday.
Okay. So
my offer is still good, by the way. If you don't follow on Twitter until 3 o'clock Eastern time, which is approximately 45 minutes from now.
You'll follow back?
I will follow back. It's an automatic follow back, no questions asked.
Okay.
All right? So if you want to come over, because I'm pushing for 2K. This is my push for 2K. Even got a couple of, hey, good luck on pushing for 2K Twitters a little while ago, too.
Oh, hey.
So see, people understand my quest. I do not promote enough, so I need to get out there and pimp myself.
No, man. You want to add followers, John.
Is that how they say it?
Not detract from your followers.
No, I don't want to drag my followers on you. I don't want to pimp myself? No. Okay, probably not. Not much to pimp here. That's very true. All right, so here we go. So that's it. That's how you reach us. And find me on Facebook. Rooke is the last name. Had some new Facebook friends as well within the last few
days.
What
are you up to on there?
About 2,100.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
So all of those Facebook people, you know, need to climb on board.
I find out, though, honestly, a lot of Facebook people do not tweet. That, you know, one social medium is enough for them.
Yeah.
I actually have found that
preferred social media medium.
I've actually found that I am in the minority because I have a Facebook and a Twitter, and I try to keep both. In fact, I've tied my Twitter directly into my Facebook.
Oh, really?
So anytime I tweet, it goes to my Facebook, and it actually posts my status on Facebook.
Oh.
So I actually kind of like that because it saves me time, and I hit both audiences, but I really don't think I have too much of a crossover mix. There is some.
Okay.
There is some, but I would say that the majority of Facebook friends are not tweeters or Twitterers, and I think the majority of my Twitter followers are not Facebook friends.
Oh, okay.
So actually, if you follow in one of the other category, if you want to join the other side, come on, let's go. Because frankly, I enjoy it. I like it. Whenever I go online at night, and maybe I'm doing I'm writing a column or I'm trying to prep from a game broadcast, something like that, and someone sees me online, I'm happy to exchange some info. You want to talk football, even when we're not on the air here, or you want to talk a little college hoop or whatever. I kind of like doing that. That's just, it's almost like a 24/7 talk show. And I really don't mind that. It keeps me socially, actively engaged, involved. It kind of gets the ticker thinking a little bit, which I like.
A little gray cells.
Yeah. Working. Yeah, I like that. The gray matter cells working. So that's good stuff. All right. So tell me how you think it's going to unfold.
Patriots will get a touchdown in each quarter, and they'll surrender a field goal in each quarter. So 28-12.
So 7-7-7-7-3-3-3-3 in every quarter.
28-12. There you go. That's it.
You think that the Patriot defense will keep Miami out of the end zone?
Yeah.
Based on?
I don't think it's I mean, they held a better Cincinnati offense to one touchdown, did they not?
They did.
So I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that they could do that to the Dolphins.
I'm just a little nervous. I mean, I'll feel a lot better about your prediction if Aqib Talib is going to play. He was at practice again today?
He was. That's three straight practices now for him.
Then I'm feeling a lot better about that. A lot better. I'd also feel a little bit better if some of those linebackers could cover a little better. Because I think that Miami is going to work the dead middle of the field. That's what Ryan Tannehill does. Mm-hmm. His statistics have backed that up. And I talked a little bit about that in the program yesterday. And my guess is that the linebackers are going to get a workout. I think Brian Hartline is going to be a big reason for that.
And I wonder if Kyle Arrington will reclaim his starting job or whether Marquise Cole will be the third defensive back.
Well,
cornerback, I should say.
My guess would be, again, just a guess. I'm not basing this on anything other than the fact that, Kyle did not have a good week last week at all. and was replaced by Cole.
One of the worst I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, and so I think his role is pretty succinct now. He had such a good start to the season as the nickelback that, frankly, I'm not sure that, you know, they need to go. Let's put it this way. I think he'll get a chance to sort of reclaim that spot if they're going to end up playing in, you know, in the plus defense. But if he gets burnt early, I can see
short
them.
Leash, yeah.
I can see a very short leash. Yeah. Absolutely short leash. And Kyle Arrington goes right back on the dog pile just like he was with, you know, perhaps before the year started.
I mean, basically, I just don't trust Ryan Tannehill. I don't think he's the answer. So I think the
Dolphins would argue that point with you. I think they definitely think he's the answer.
They
need to find a way to protect him. That's
maybe
their biggest problem.
Maybe. But I'll take my chances.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. All right, so 28-12 is what you think overall, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And the Patriots' defense is improving. Well, why don't we go with the injury report today and the practice report overall, because Tommy Kelly was not there.
Mm-hmm.
And
Leon Washington
was
not
there.
You can almost count, you know, set your watch by it. Those two aren't going to be there. That's fairly good news, though, for everybody else. The other 59 guys were out there, 53 and the 8 on the practice squad.
Good news for Danny on the Mendola.
Yeah, he didn't talk to us when he came in the locker room, but he was out there two days in a row.
Wow.
And he looks...
the short time you saw him, did he look crisp? Did he dogged? I mean, what?
Well, we only got to watch stretching.
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
We didn't get to watch it. Someday, like yesterday, we got to watch some drills, and he looked... he looked fine, but as I was saying to these guys on the previous show... I'm so used to seeing him now with that hitch in his walk and his run and his stride that that's become normal now. So I almost don't even notice that anymore. But we still have to remember he does have a serious groin injury that he's been dealing with all season.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't seem to be limiting or preventing him from going out and playing.
Right.
It's the concussion this week, and he seemed as normal as he was before. As healthy as he could be at this point, but we still don't know if he'll play because the concussion thing, you have to go through that.
There's an NFL mandated test
right.
that you have to pass.
Right. There's a
before you can be allowed.
There's
back
a protocol
on the field.
That you have to
yes,
go through.
Yes, that is correct.
And we don't know yet.
Has taken that?
Yeah, I think practicing might be part of the protocol. You know, like you've gotten to that stage. I don't know if that necessarily equates to playing on Sunday, but. It certainly is good that he's out in the field. If he were not practicing again, that would be terrible.
Right.
Really serious. But, you know, 2 days in a row, that's good.
Okay.
We'll wait till tomorrow. He was limited yesterday's report.
Mm-hmm.
Probably be limited again today. Tomorrow we'll know what his game status is at late afternoon.
Still no word on Armin Armstead?
No, has not been activated to practice, nor has Mark Harrison, the rookie receiver.
Okay.
So no change with those guys.
All right. So the defense is what it is. There's no Tommy Kelly in the middle. We anticipate Dante Hightower be back calling the signals with the green dot. Aqib Talib has been at practice for 3 straight days this week.
Right. Some people aren't buying that he's going to play.
Who? Talib?
Yeah.
Why?
Because they think that, you know, that the hip is serious enough that and is a recurring problem with him.
You mean we're going to have a Gronkowski thing here? He can practice, but he can't play?
Possible.
Really?
Well, that's what some people think. Some people in our media circle who I've talked to think.
And they're led to believe this. Why?
Just because of what they know about him and his history and the nature of the injury.
Wow. I would think, based on everything that I've seen and heard from him this year, that would be a surprise to me. He genuinely seems to be motivated to play. He likes the guys. There's a good camaraderie amongst the unit in the defensive backfield.
Yeah.
And he's driven to play and have a good year because it's another money year for him.
It is. But, I mean, if his health is at risk, I mean, if he can go out there and do some things at practice but not play in a game... It behooves him to be careful with his health.
Talib wants to lead the NFL in interceptions. There's no better, you know,
yes.
cha-ching for him than
true,
that.
True, but if he's putting himself at risk of doing more serious damage, that's something to consider in a contract year or any year, really. But
this is a hip flexor problem that we're in.
Well, it's a left hip. I don't know if it's a hip flexor, but it's the left hip, which could be a lot more than just a hip flexor.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Well, then I guess we'll have to just wait and see. Mm. He was
again. This is just people I've in our colleagues
just,
of ours.
They're just sort of supposing and surmising.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So there's no definitive.
Yeah. They've not told me that they have a source that's saying he's not playing or anything like that.
Okay.
But
all right.
You know, that's just there.
Well, then
that's
we'll
just
take
the scuttlebutt. You know,
we try to give you the scuttlebutt.
Yeah,
that's
we have
exactly
time
right.
in the locker room when the players aren't available or just aren't
to
just
talk
aren't
amongst
there.
Yourselves.
Yeah. So we
and this was some of the scuttlebutt on Aqib Talib.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Well, see, that's why you
he hasn't talked.
Why you
yet.
Listen to what? That's why you listen to what we have to say here.
He hasn't talked this week. Now we still have one more day of availability with players, but normally, if a player isn't playing, he doesn't talk.
Right.
Normally,
right?
Normally, I mean, Gronk was the exception for the last.
Well, just because the demand was overwhelming.
Right. Talib normally talks each week, so we'll see if that's the case. He didn't last week because he didn't practice and didn't. I mean, he practiced.
Has he been
one
available?
Day last
has
week,
he been but, available to the media this week?
No, not seen him.
Not yet.
No.
Well, then.
So, there's one more day.
That could be.
There's one more day, though. Maybe he's giving it the full week to see how he feels.
Okay. Well, then that, if you're looking for hints, there you go. He hadn't spoken to the media this week. Mm-hmm. That's as big a hint as any. All right. 855-PATS-500, prediction Thursday. So we want you to get your thoughts in, your scores in. You can either do it by phone, by email, or by social media. Lead it off with Sean in Vancouver. Sean, you're in the playbook.
Hey, I want to start off right away with my prediction. I'm going to go Patriots 34, Dolphins 27.
34-27, nice and high scoring.
So a push for you on the spread.
Yeah. I think the Vegas has it right this week.
Okay.
And I could see where the Talib not playing concern comes from because we don't know how well he's practiced. He's limited, and the Patriots never tell us anything. And so if he's not, 100%, is it really worth, I don't know, mm-hmm. if there's a risk to re-injuring himself or, making that be an issue in the future. Maybe if he's not really ready, they might send him out, through the bye. So that's a possibility. What I'd like to see from the Patriots is more balance. I think Ridley is a way to go with that. And, one of the problems I saw, my biggest nitpick from that last game is not running the ball enough. It seems like what the Patriots want to do is have that quick offense where they're going no huddle and they like Bolden in that position. I know Ridley caught a couple of balls. I don't know if he's able to pick up on that type of offense. But to me, it's even if you don't do that, it's better to have him on the field and have that spread of the run so we can play action and have more balance.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I'm mystified as to why he's been basically relegated to backup duty. I know he, had the knee problem going into Cincinnati, but he was off the injury report last week, and
he looked great. He
did, didn't he? I mean, I didn't see why, and he looked good against the Jets when he was in there.
Just 11 carries, so.
Yeah. So I have no explanation for it, and I don't know. What to tell you? I agree with you, though. I think he needs to be more involved because when he's out there, it's not like they're losing yardage when he's running the ball. He's gaining good yards.
True.
I don't get it.
And if you're in that quick offense where you're no huddle, if you don't get a first down, it's a three and out. That gives the defense more time on the field and hurts everything.
So. That's correct. Yep, absolutely. 34-27, huh, Sean?
That's what I'm going with.
So you think the offense is back, do you?
Yeah, hopefully I'll be right this time, man. Came close a few weeks ago with that 1 point.
Yep, with 1 point, yep. I remember that. I recall that. So, well, hopefully you're right. And if it is 34-27, I think that there'll be a lot of people that would be pretty pleased with that result.
Yeah, I would for sure.
All right. Good stuff, Sean.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Sean.
Appreciate that. 855-PATS-500 or 508-298-0398 if you want to do it by phone. Dave in Lancaster, California says, Patriots win 34-16. Gronk gets a pair of touchdowns. Defense gets six sacks.
Six sacks?
Six sacks?
Wow.
Wow. I remember now the Dolphins brought in Bryant McKinney this week, so. I know. And that's supposed to help?
Yeah, I know, right?
Plays that Matador offensive line. Ole! Ole!
Toreador.
Toreador. That's exactly right. 34-16. That's a good one. Dave also says, thank you for taking the time to read this. I got the Patriots winning 31-17.
Well, that's going to be a close, if it comes down to that, that's pretty close score to the other guy.
31-17.
What did he say? 34-16 and 31-17?
31-17. Yeah,
those are pretty close.
Within a score of each other, yeah. Right? Nori says on Facebook, he says, predictions, Pats 24, Dolphins 17. Pats will bounce back after a tough loss against the stinking Jets. They will win at home. I don't see them losing back-to-back games, especially against another division opponent. I hope the offensive line can hold their own against a physical Dolphins D-line. I do think they will. Giving Brady needed time in the pocket to throw the ball accurately. That's what I will be watching for on Sunday. Could be that we've had a few people decide that they want to wait to make their call and their decision after we speak to Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald. Could be. Either that or no one thinks that we're really going to give away a media guide here because we haven't done that yet.
Well, it's tough to predict an exact score in any contest.
Yeah, well, do we need to lower our standards here and say, you know, get within a field goal or pick the spread? Or I mean,
no.
Should we lower our standards?
No,
I don't think so either.
Keep them high.
I think we need to, definitely. Because this person, whoever nails it,
is going to be
unbelievable bragging rights.
Oh, right. It's going to be historic.
Yes, first time ever, actually.
Yeah.
We've been doing this for a couple of years now, and it would be the first time ever. All right, Chris says on Facebook, John, big win for the Red Sox. Yeah. How about that last night, by the way?
Yeah, good win.
See?
Yeah. They scored early. They got out in
early.
The lead.
You know, and I will digress here for just a moment, but could they have coughed up a hairball any bigger than the one St. Louis coughed up in the first two innings last night?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
I know.
I mean.
And the umps and the they
got
the right call.
That was
the right call.
The play in the second inning on the bobble on the exchange.
Absolutely the right call.
To Kozma. It was absolutely the right call. He never had control of the ball at second base. Not even for a split second.
No.
So Dana DeMuth, who was the umpire that made the call, he says he was fixated on the feet.
Right.
Which I can almost understand to see if his foot comes off early.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can't, if you're an umpire that's on top of the plate, you got to look at the exchange too, because you know that's where the real test is going to come from.
Don't you,
as an umpire in the past, I almost watch the exchange because I take it for granted that the player's foot is going to be on a bag.
Well, I've never umpired a baseball game and never played organized baseball, but to me, it would seem logical if you're the umpire. Wouldn't you want to make sure that the guy has the ball first? Like in the NFL, it's equated to the NFL. A ref is watching a wide receiver on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
He's watching for the catch first.
Yeah.
And then he's looking at the feet
to
see if he's got him in bounds. The
right.
First priority is make the catch.
That's kind of what I think. You got to make the catch
up,
first.
And then you look down.
And I think in that instance, the umpire had it wrong because
he was looking at the feet. You have to, you can't take
fundamentally
for granted that
he took for granted the fact that the catch was going to be made. I agree with you. And that should not be taken for granted by any official, especially Major League Baseball umpire.
And it takes a split second. If you see the catch, then you look down.
Correct.
I mean, it's not like he's, you know, 10 miles away. He's right there.
Correct. Absolutely. But then it just.
But they corrected themselves, which
they
is good. They got
it was
it right.
The right call. I really thought that that was a big victory for Major League Baseball because next year, of course, as we all know, instant replay is going to come into baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to make the inexorably long games longer, which I fear is going to help destroy the sport overall. I will opine on that later.
Okay.
But all I'm saying is that I think it was a good moment for baseball last night because the officials, the umpires in this case, proved they can do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on
a
grand
majority
stage.
Vote.
Especially, it was unanimous other than DeMuth.
Oh, right.
The other five guys overruled him.
Right.
Which is great. That's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be a system of checks and balances.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right, Chris, good job by you. You got us off the beaten path here. He says, I think I'm going to go to Boston. Everything for all sports except basketball. Hate the sport. Oh, don't hate on the sport. Learn the sport. You'll love the sport. He says, my prediction is that we're going to see Brady to Gronk more this week. If Tlaib is not out there on Sunday, our DBs will be true DBs and not the defensive back type. They obviously cannot cover the backfield with success. This Facebook post just degenerated in a hurry.
Yeah, I know,
I think the O-line is going to step up and prevent the Dolphins' D-line from rushing Brady, and I think that way Brady will feel more confident, have better accuracy, won't be rushing his throws. We need to convert more of our third downs this week. Well, that's the obvious statement of the week. Going 1-for-12 isn't going to seal the deal. So with that being said, final score 31-17, Pats. So that's the...
Just to digress again, the New York Daily News, just had their cover displayed on ESPN, and it was Call Classic.
Call Classic?
With the picture of the second base player.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. All right. So let's get more into the Miami Dolphins and where they are really right now, besides just being in 3-3. Armando Salguero writes for the Miami Herald, covers the Dolphins. He joins us here in Patriots Playbook. Armando, it's John and Eric. Great to talk with you again, my friend.
It's my pleasure, man.
So what did you think about the call of second base last night in the World Series?
You're going to hate me, but I didn't watch it. I didn't see it. I'm a Yankee fan.
Oh!
When the Yankees are out, the season is over for
me. That would explain a lot. No worries, my friend. No worries at all.
And by the way, the season was over for me in
May?
In June.
Yeah,
June.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's good. As long as you understand that, you damn Yankee fan, you. Okay.
Yeah, I get it.
That's okay, fair enough. All of a sudden, this team starts out 3-0. Loses two, gets a bye week, faces Buffalo, comes out and lays another egg. What's changed?
Nothing. basically, they are a desperate football team. The desperation has seeped to the point where they traded for Bryant McKinney to play left tackle. And if you remember, Bryant McKinney was in Baltimore, and he was benched by the Ravens. When they traded for Eugene Monroe from Jacksonville to come in and be better than him. So basically the Dolphins are upgrading with a guy who was benched in Baltimore for a guy who was no longer any good for Jacksonville. Not great.
Yeah. All right, so they get Bryant McKinney in. Obviously, Ryan Tannehill was on a little bit worse pace to be hammered than Tom Brady has been over the last few weeks himself. So offensive line woes notwithstanding, where is this team improving, or is it improving anywhere in your estimation?
Oh, well, they have a lot of weapons. I guess Brian Hartline said in the offseason, we have the best receiving core in the AFC East. And guess what? He was right.
Mm-hmm.
Hartline is on pace like he was last year for a 1,000-yard season. They've got a deep threat now in Mike Wallace, formerly of Pittsburgh. Brandon Gibson just is coming off his best game. He scored 2 touchdowns, and he's a good addition. So they are happy with the fact that when Tannehill has time to throw the football, they can get, down the field a little bit with some chunk plays. But the problem, again, is that Tannehill is on pace to be sacked like 77 times this year. And, by the way, the team record is 53, set back in the 60s when they were an expansion franchise. Whoa. So it's a bad situation when you've got all these nice, new, shiny weapons, but you can't really maximize them because your quarterback is running for his life. And oh, yeah, Tannehill is on the injury report with a sore throwing shoulder this week.
Yeah, we did see that, in fact. So is there any real danger of him not playing by your estimation?
No, I don't believe that is the case. But it speaks to the fact that, the guy's gotten beat up, my experience is it's never really – or let me rephrase that. It's usually not the game in which the player gets hurt that is the problem. It's the next hit that he takes on that tweaked up shoulder that becomes the major issue. So they have to do a better job of not getting him hit on that shoulder again, and so far they haven't done a very good job of that.
Yeah, and if New England's defensive front does one thing well, They're better at rushing the passer than they are at defending the run. So one of our listeners predicted 6 sacks for the Patriots this weekend.
I think that's a little
it might be a little high, but
a little high, but nevertheless, you know,
I think they can get pressure.
Yeah.
And if they can
get pressure, the Dolphins, by the way, there's something of a mutiny going on down here because fans are upset with offensive coordinator Mike Sherman because he doesn't run the football. And that's weird because, you know, fans down here grew up on Dan Marino throwing the ball all the time, and that's what they've always loved. But they want the Dolphins to run the ball more, and Mike Sherman, for whatever reason, he doesn't do that as much. I mean, they averaged nearly 5 yards a pop against the Buffalo Bills last week, but then for some reason they just stopped running the ball in the third quarter. And it's inexplicable at times why it happens, but sure enough, it has been something that he does. It's his MO, basically, the entire season, really.
You know, it's kind of funny that you bring that up because, frankly, we kind of thought that the Patriots gave up on running the ball a bit early last week against the Jets, and that Josh McDaniels is also getting criticized somewhat for his choice of play calls, maybe not sticking with the run long enough, especially in light of the fact that Tom Brady is having accuracy difficulty, being under 50% from passing 2 out of the last 3 weeks. So I find that coincidence to be a little bit strange.
Yeah, what I basically see is whoever loses this game, you know, there's going to be a lot of questioning. I mean, obviously the Patriots haven't lost 3 in a row, but they've lost 2 out of 3. And they don't lose at Foxborough in October. They just don't. I think they've lost 1 game dating back to 2003. If they lose to a team that has lost 3 in a row, I assume that there's going to be some major hand-wringing and, you know, gnashing of teeth in New England. If the Dolphins come home with 4 losses in a row, oh, boy, that's going to get ugly.
Armando, that happens every time they lose a game. It doesn't matter when that is. Even when they're 15-1.
No question about that. Armando Salguero, who covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald, joining us here in the playbook. You have actually yourself been a little bit critical of Joe Philbin and the coaching staff, speaking of the criticism of Mike Sherman. Does he not get it any longer? How has he changed things that have helped lead this team, shall we say, southward?
Well, it's not that he doesn't get it any longer. I'd like to say that this is a recent thing with Mike Sherman. It's not. His play, I mean, what does one do on 3rd and inches from the opponent's, you know, 38-yard line?
Usually you run the ball.
Yeah. You sneak. Mm-hmm. You quarterback sneak. It works like 80% of the time. You quarterback sneak. You need an inch.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Sherman against New Orleans, he ran a sweep. It lost 3 yards. Everybody freaked out. And then he said that it was haunting him. The play call haunted him afterward. And then the very next week against Baltimore, he did it again. It was 3rd and inches, and he ran a sweep to the other side.
maybe he needs an exorcism.
You know, the play call that haunted him, you know, I guess the haunting was very short-lived because he did it again the very next week. And, oh, by the way, it didn't work again. So there is some issues. You know, what we've seen down here is the Dolphins played New Orleans before the Patriots did. The Dolphins allowed Jimmy Graham a free release. And before the game was over, Jimmy Graham had caught 4 passes for 100 yards and dunked the ball twice across the crossbar for touchdowns. Then you watch the Patriots play the guy, and they're all over him. They're mugging him. They're pressing him. He's hardly a factor in the game. And it's not because they had Aqib Talib, because Aqib Talib got hurt, and they still did it with the next guy up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So people see that down here and go, what's up with our coaching staff, you know, the game planning? What's up with the strategy stuff that just doesn't seem to work sometimes?
Well, speaking of game planning and strategies, it seems to me there's some similarity, and I think it's probably because the Dolphins defensive coordinator brought his system from Cincinnati. So what we're seeing with the Dolphins, similar to what we saw with Cincinnati 2 weeks ago, Cincinnati completely shut down the New England Patriots. Could that be where Miami's success on Sunday may lie?
That's where their hopes are. You're absolutely right. Kevin Coyle came from Cincinnati, runs the same defense as Cincinnati, has good personnel, kind of like Cincinnati. Maybe the cornerbacks aren't as physical as what they are in Cincinnati, but, you know, I would say the edge rushers in Miami are better. Cameron Wake, by the way, who hasn't been healthy the last few weeks, is healthy now, so expect him to play a lot. That's their hope, that come Sunday, the same basic scheme and defense that shut down Tom Brady and ended his 52-game touchdown streak will have success against him again. We'll see.
Well, the book on, you know, getting to Brady is certainly, I think, well read now throughout the NFL is hit him and hit him often and especially hit him early. Now, can the Dolphins have the Dolphins based on what they've done in the first six games they've played? Can they aspire to those goals?
Sure, and they can do it where it's least comfortable for Brady because they can do it up the middle. Randy Starks is a very good player. You know, Paul Soliai is a very good player. Jared Odrick is a former first-round draft pick. He's playing very well. So they've got three defensive tackles that are good at, well, Soliai is mostly a run stopper, but the other two are pretty good at pass rush. And pass rush right up the gut is something that Brady doesn't like a whole lot of.
No, and our center Ryan Wendell and the right guard spot in particular have struggled to protect Brady in recent weeks, so that could be a concern.
And you know, I understand that obviously Tom Brady is still Tom Brady and he's great and all of that, but I don't get the sense that the Dolphins are in awe of Brady like I have in the past. It's not, they don't feel like they have no chance, obviously. Mm.
Well, he's been human this year. He's been showing, frailty. He's been off the mark on a lot of his throws. I mean, I think a lot of people have written about that and talked about that, and fans are concerned about that, I think. I mean, it's not just the receivers dropping the football, which has happened, you know, more often this year than in past years, too. But, you know, I think the Dolphins have reason to think that way.
Yeah, you know, you look at Brady, and he's one outstanding major league super pass away from, you know, three bad games in a row. So, yeah, opponents are going to start to look at that and think, well, you know, we'll see. I saw it down here with Dan Marino. It was different with Marino because Marino, you know, it wasn't about so much the arm, it was about the legs. He couldn't get out of anybody's way, and so he became a target for everybody. But, you know, time doesn't stop for anybody.
Seems to me, Armando, that both teams would like to run the ball in order to take some of the pressure and or relieve some of the rush on each of their respective quarterbacks. So how well really can Miami run it between Thomas and Miller?
They run it great when they try. I mean, again, you know, Miller is averaging, I think, 4.4, 4.3 yards a carry. If you give him the ball 20 times, he's going to have a fairly decent game. Daniel Thomas is a little bit not quite as explosive. He's not a home run hitter, but he's coming off his best game of the season. But the thing is, neither one of them gets the ball on average more than 10 times a game. The Dolphins, their typical byline for the game is Miller gets 10 carries, Thomas gets 8, and off we go to the throw on every down races. You know, that's been the complaint here. The complaint is, it's not that you can't run the ball, it's that We don't know whether you can because you haven't tried enough.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Where do you think this game then, in your estimation, boils down? Is it Miami's ability to put pressure on Brady, or is it Miami's ability to actually do damage against a wounded Patriot defense?
I think it boils down to how effective Brady and Gronkowski will be. The Dolphins couldn't stop Jimmy Graham, had no clue as to how to stop Jimmy Graham. If Gronkowski in his second game plays anything like Jimmy Graham played against him, and I know that he was the scout team Jimmy Graham for the Patriots in against New Orleans, if he is up to that caliber, if he is old Gronk, it's going to be very hard for the Dolphins because the Patriots will score points and particularly score points in the red zone. I think that Ryan Tannehill, who had two interceptions and a fumble last week, will recover somewhat. I don't expect him to have a similar kind of game, and I think they'll probably protect him a little bit more than they have. But if the Patriots are scoring points, they can't keep up with the Patriots.
Excellent, Armando. You ready for the Miami Beach Bowl?
Oh yes, in front of 34,000 people at the baseball stadium.
Hey, the baseball stadium would be sold out.
For once.
That's all they need.
Sore subject down here.
I know.
A very sore subject down here.
Yes, I certainly realize that. Leave it to football to come in and rescue baseball in South Florida.
Well, what we have, you know, the fallback position now is, well, heat season starts soon.
That's also true. Yeah. Break out those LeBron jerseys. There you go. Armando Salguero covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald. Thanks so much for the time. We sure appreciate it. Safe travels up this way.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Anytime.
You got it.
All
thanks.
Right, see you Sunday.
All right, Armando Salguero. There you go. I'm not entirely surprised that he's not sold on the trend right now for the Dolphins. It definitely seems to be in a negative sense.
Yeah.
He brought up some interesting numbers that I guess I hadn't really realized, but yeah, the Patriots don't lose, you know, in these situations. In fact, the Patriots haven't lost back-to-back division games since 2006, last time that happened. So it's been a while since the Patriots have lost two AFC East teams in a row. Mm. That's another one you might want to, you know, kind of hang your hat on for this week as you consider your predictions. Webradio at patriots.com. 855-PATS-500. Tweet it out as well at JR Broadcaster or hit me up on Facebook, John.Rook. Here's Andrew in Buffalo. Hey, Andrew, how's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Good, man.
That's good. I think this year we can't take any games for granted anymore, because we see what teams can do with on the front. You know, the front seven starts getting pressure on Brady. That's what I feel like Miami can do with getting pressure on Brady. We got to do a better job with blocking, but I think they should work on more towards running the ball first, my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
On defense, I think our secondary got tackled better. I've seen some missed tackles on Geno Smith last week, particularly to Marquise Colt. Guys just got to learn how to break down and tackle better. Brady's deep ball, he don't have a lot of confidence when he's throwing the deep ball. I think his perception is, like, really, if his man don't get it, like his wide receiver, no one else will, and I think that's the reason why he just throw it so far. Like, he just don't want to throw that interception.
Well, the problem, though, is he's been underthrowing a lot of his deep balls. Recently.
Yeah. But my prediction, I believe we're going to win this game, but it won't be a blowout. I'm thinking more lines of 24-17.
24-17, is that what you said?
Yeah, 24-17 Patriots.
All right, excellent. 24-17. Got it. Actually, I think that's probably a pretty fair score, to be honest. About that range. I'm not really feeling high octane offense. I think both teams will probably sputter. I think that, you know, if someone gets past that, you know, 24 to 27 range, it's because somebody has left the football on the turf or has thrown it away, one or the other.
Right. Yeah, pretty close game, but I think we'll come out with the win.
All right. Andrew, good stuff, my man.
Thank you.
You got it. All right. Andrew in Buffalo, time for you as well, 855-PATS-500. Eric says 28 to 12.
Yeah, 28-12.
That's what you said. I'm going to go.
I thought you were reading somebody's.
No, yeah. No. I was going to hold on for the last second here, but I might as well let it rip here, and then I'll get to some more predictions. But I'm thinking, yesterday I was feeling pretty good about this. I backtracked a little on this today, and a lot of it has to do with the uncertainty defensively, because I feel like Miami will do whatever they can to get the ball out of Tannehill's hands more quickly. And whether or not that means the short passing range, you know, pepper in the middle of the field, which they have a tendency to go to anyway, or perhaps trying to figure out a way to run. And that's why it was interesting for me to talk to Armando Salguero today, because, you know, he's very critical. The Dolphins offense, you know, giving up on the run too early thus far this year. I'm going to go, it's a 7-point Patriot spread right now. I was about ready to call the Dolphins in covering, but I don't think I'm going to. So I'm going to go with Patriots 27, Dolphins 17. 27-17.
10 points gets you a cover.
10 points gets a cover. I think it'll be a late cover. I think, you know, they'll end up scoring late and, you know, make it a two-possession game, and the Dolphins have, you know, won't have a shot there at the end. That's what I think it will probably end up happening. I think the Dolphins make this a game for about 3.5 quarters. I think the Patriots will have an opportunity, as you kind of laid it out for us a little bit earlier. I think the Patriots will have an opportunity to put this game away, and they will fail to do so, which is part of the problem that, you know, this team has, and I think we're just going to have to get used to it until all the healthy pieces to the puzzle are back. And until we get to that point, this team is going to sputter from time to time, whether it's, you know, through the running game, certainly in the passing game, and in stopping the other team. So I'm going to go with 27-17. Pats, but they do go to 6-2 with the Steelers coming in before the bye week. So that's kind of looking, and I think the Dolphins will drop to 3-4, and with four straight losses, they will be doing some serious soul searching in South Florida.
Yeah, I think the Dolphins are coming back to earth. I really do. I don't think they're. I originally, in the beginning of the season, I thought they were the one team in the division that could give New England serious run for their money as the division champs, but not anymore. I think they're coming. They're leveling off. I think that's a diplomatic way to put it.
Okay. On Twitter, let's see. And you, again, at JR Broadcaster is the tweet address. I'm going to pump that as much as I can, or pimp it, one or the other. Michael says, John, I think we're going to see a much improved Pats offense, and the Dolphins will be crushed 31-17. Seems to be a consensus score, 31-17. Because if that's the score in the game, we're going to give away about a half a dozen of these things, I think. Nick says, John, saw that you guys laughed at me liking Kobe. I think we did do that a day or so ago anyway. He says, got some haters, ha-ha. Anyways, I picked the Pats to win it 33-24. He wants me to follow him. Don't I already follow you? Yes, I already follow you, Nick. You're in. Okay? You're in, brother. Let's see. What else do we have here? Jeff says, Pats 27-10. Gronk 2 TDs. Jones gets 2.5 sacks. Now, if Jones can get 2.5 sacks, then I would agree with that. I think that they will keep the Dolphins down a little bit. I think that's a huge key. But where does he get the sacks from? Does he get it from the inside? Does he get it around in?
Does it matter?
No, but I have a tendency to believe, though, that you know, those sacks may come from the inside. Because they like lining him up a tackle, at least of late. David says, if Grace falls on the team and we make it to the playoffs, do you think the Patriots get a fourth Lombardi without Vince this year? Already looking ahead, David.
Yeah. I'm not willing to predict that far ahead. No.
We got to get through the week, David. I understand the thought process here. That's a little tough. Let's see what else we have. Alok says, good luck reaching 2K by the finish of this show. I don't know if he's being sarcastic or not there. I don't think I'm going to hit it by the end of the show, but thank you. I appreciate that. He says, my prediction is 24-14 Pats win. 24-14. Okay. Let's see. What else do we have here? Ray says week 8 pick, 27-17. Patriots will bounce back from last week and get an important divisional win. Go Pats. That's what
that's
I
your
had.
Pick.
27-17. So Ray and I, brilliant minds think a lot, Ray. That's a think alike. Not only think a lot, but we think alike. Here's another question. Here's a question from JD. Big fan from Newtown, Connecticut. Well, thank you, JD. Listen every week for a long time. Hope you reach 2,000. See, there's somebody else pulling for 2,000 here. Says, do you think Jay Ratliff would be a good sign? I think Leon Washington has been wasting a spot on this roster. It would be a good swap. From what I hear, he's still getting his football condition back, but I'd rather keep him inactive until December and help that line. Any thoughts one way or the other?
Read that to me again.
Okay. Do you think Jay Ratliff would be a good sign? I think Leon Washington has been wasting a spot on this roster. Would be a good swap. From what I hear, he's still getting his football condition back, but I'd rather keep him inactive until December and then help that line.
Yeah, I agree with the Leon Washington thing. I think they have to make a move with him sooner or later. He's just taking up space there for no good reason. Jay Ratliff, I don't know. He bothers me. I know he's talented and they have a need there, but I don't just want a talented player. I want a talented player who's not going to be a problem. I just don't. I'm not feeling Jay Ratliff. Yeah, I know the other guys in PFW are, but I don't.
Okay. Interesting.
Do you?
I'm kind of wishy-washy. I'll be honest. I mean, although, you know, if you're telling me that it's a Washington for Ratliff swap, you know, for the roster spot, then I'd definitely head that direction. Washington's giving you zip.
No, yeah, he has. You're right. You're right.
That's why. I'm very disappointed in that. I really thought he would be a boost for this team.
I had really high hopes for him.
It's been an absolute zero.
Yeah.
Rashad says, I'm going with 27-17 Patriots. Copycat. Brady throws just one TD, but Ridley gets two rushing TDs, and the Pats get four sacks. Fair enough. Mark says, Patriots bounce back and win 27-21. Glad to see Gronk back, as are, I think, a lot of Patriots fans. Glad to see Gronk back as well. All right, and so Eric says 28-12.
Correct.
28-12.
Four touchdowns to four field goals.
All right. By the way, I want you to know I'm 6-1 with the Patriots against the spread this year.
Really?
Yes. So
I am good.
So I've given them, you know, I discussed this earlier in the week when you weren't here on Tuesday. So, you know, and I kind of chided Andy about it since, you know, he likes to chide everybody.
Oh, yeah.
So I wanted to make sure he was properly put in his place.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
6-1, that means the Patriots have to cover for me to keep that streak alive.
And you had 27-17.
That's a cover.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
All right, so there you go. Just so you know.
Well, that's good.
You know,
anytime you can be above 500 against the spread, that's a good thing.
I totally agree with that. For entertainment purposes only, however. All right?
Yeah, right. We're not putting any money down on this.
And also for entertainment purposes only, this little treatise.
Well done.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corncob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
The orchestra has tuxes, don't they?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Right.
Tuxes, sequins. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they're sophisticated.
They're
bunch,
a little glittery.
Right?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Nothing to do with anything really today. I was flipping through my notebook and I found this word
that you'd never seen before, but you thought you'd share with us.
No, I've seen it before.
Oh, okay.
But I keep a journal. I keep it when I'm reading.
Now, Robin's request is that we use these words in everyday language.
Well, Robin, I do use them in everyday language.
All right, who wants to line up behind me and smack Mr. Smug in the face right here? We have way too much fun. All right, go.
No, when I read, I keep a little notebook, and when I find a word that I don't know, I write it down in the book.
Yeah.
And so for the words of the day, I just go back and consult my notebook and try to pick one that I think you'll like.
Okay.
So today's, I can kind of tie it into our radio show family here. It's called casuistry.
Casuistry?
Mm-hmm. C-A-S, like casual, C-A-S-U, casu, I-S-T-R-Y, casuistry.
You made that up.
I did not make it up, John. Kid. I don't. When have I ever made up a word on Word of the Day? When? When? Like the Patriots in October. I don't.
You're like the NFL. You go into the record book, you change things, and you go, what? Who? Me?
Yeah. No. No. But casuistry is something that Andy Hart does often.
Oh?
It's the use of clever.
Means you're insane.
using clever, but not always sound or reasonable logic to make an ethical argument.
To make an ethical argument.
Yeah.
Okay.
To say that something is, you know, right or wrong, good or bad. But, you know, using a, like Andy a lot of times will say, you know, he likes to use double entendre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he'll go, what? I was talking about,
yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
He's always talking about the other thing.
Right. Yeah. That's an example of casuistry.
Oh, I see. Okay. I think I understand that. A little hard for me to hang on to. It's Thursday. Sure happy it's Thursday, by the way.
Now I see what you did there, yeah. Mr. Acronym.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, casuistry. Mm-hmm. All right, that's an interesting one. I doubt very seriously I ever hear that word again after today.
I'll make sure I use it
then. I want you to use it in everyday language, just like Miss Robin requests. Everyday language words here.
Didn't she like my sentence yesterday with tossing
Tangway
out the window?
Yeah. Well, that was pretty good. Yes, that was pretty good. And I'm sure more than just Robin liked that yesterday. All right. So we'll see you here on Saturday morning, and we'll try to get ready for, Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Sunday morning, and we'll try to get ready for a 1 o'clock game again.
1 o'clock home game, yeah.
Liking 1 o'clock home games.
Yep.
So far. Anyway, so good. Good stuff.
All right, bud.
Thanks, man. All right, Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly. Let's get in a timeout here. We will. Hang on a second. Wait. Hold on. Did we have? Yeah, we did. Let me get him in before we get to a break here, because he's hanging on. It's Avi in Miami.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Hey, Avi, how are you?
I'm good. First time caller, long time listener.
Hey, well, thank you very much for taking the time. I'm very glad that I waited to take the stupid commercial break.
No, I appreciate it. So, I think fans down here are pretty casuistry.
You think they're pretty much what? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Casuistry, that's the word.
Oh! Yeah. He's trying to use your word, Eric. I'm loving it. How about that?
Is Eric there?
Yeah, actually, he just walked out.
Okay. Yeah. No, they are. They think that that they're just going to blow us apart down. You know.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Based on what?
I don't know. I think they're still in that LeBron thing. You know, they think that it's going to like transition over into football. But to be honest with you, they think that based on what we saw last game with Hightower.
Yeah.
They think they could do the same thing with Clay.
Yeah.
And then they think they could control the clock with Miller and the other running back they have.
Well, they have to run the football first.
Yeah.
Which they haven't really done, and they've gotten away from, and I think that's one of the big criticisms of what the Dolphins have done, and Armando Salguero from the Herald just said that a couple of minutes ago.
I know. I mean, I was even surprised that he said that if they run the ball at all, they'll run well. I mean, unfortunately, I have to see these guys every week, you know, and their running game it's not that good. And I know these guys can't really run in between tackles. I know they like to run on the outside, especially Miller. And I think we'll do a good job against that. I really do.
Okay. So you have a prediction then for Sunday?
Yeah, so I got, let me see. I heard a lot of 31-17. I definitely like the 17 for the Dolphins. I say 27. 17.
All right, that was my score prediction. So, all right. So that means if I'm right, then you're right.
Yep. That'd work. I'll do that.
Very good. All right, Avi. Well, I hope then you'll check back in afterward as well. All right, and especially before the Patriots come down there and play the Dolphins.
Sounds fair, my friend.
All right, sounds like a plan. Thank you.
All right.
You got it. Later. Yep, absolutely. All right, so there you go. It's that easy. 855-PATS-500. That's the number. 855-PATS-500. Ace Ticket Hotline 508-298-0398. Send your prediction to webradio@patriots.com via email. Find me on Twitter @JRBroadcaster or John.Rook. Last name is spelled R-O-O-K-E on Facebook. And you can send your predictions. Again, correct score wins a yearbook. After the timeout, the guru himself, Russell Baxter, in the playbook.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochere. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
The word off-season doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call Star NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance. You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios Triple Play Online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
Hour number two, Patriots Playbook for a Prediction Thursday. You can keep those cards and letters coming. Webradio at patriots.com or at 855-PATS-500 or at JR Broadcaster or John.Rook on Facebook. A lot of different ways that you can hit us. Got to hammer the social media thing there. I'm just not doing a good enough job at it. If you haven't followed Russell Baxter on Twitter, at Bax Football Guru, B-A-X Football Guru. That's how you reach him here. How many thousands of Twitter followers do you have, Russell?
I am very proud to say, and I say this, I do say this with pride, that you know, we set a goal before the season started to get to 20,000. We actually got to 22.
Wow.
And we set a goal for the Super Bowl, 25, and we were less than 1,000 away.
That's so. That is amazing. And by the way, thank you on Fridays and your follow Fridays for doing your best to pimp me up, too. I appreciate that.
You know, it's funny because some people send me, how come you send out so many Friday follows?
Yeah.
And I have a very simple answer. I said, I can't thank people enough for following what I do. To me, that's a great way to say thank you, and it's effortless.
Absolutely.
All you can do is push a button.
No question. It's all we're asking is to push buttons.
That's how I look at it. I mean, I think it's, you know, social media has been a revelation, to be bluntly honest. And I've had a blast with it, you know, besides, you know, the Facebook page we have.
Yep, same here. Right,
and
I agree.
Your Bax Football Guru, where we do polls and questions. And, you know, right now we're doing the best Jaguars team, and Kevin, of course, I won't tell you what he told me. although I had to remind him, the first 5 years of the Jacksonville Jaguars have certainly been a lot more successful than the last 5 years.
Yes, that's very true.
I mean, Tom Coughlin took them to the playoffs. Their second, third, fourth, and fifth year in the league, twice to the AFC Championship game.
Yes, that's very true.
And of course, in 1989, they had the best record in the league, which is also the last time they won a division, by the way. But they couldn't beat the Tennessee Titans in 3 tries.
That's part of their fate. That is absolutely correct. What was the best Patriots team in your poll?
The 2004 Patriots.
Yeah, I figured it'd have to be.
But I had a lot of votes for the 1776 Patriots because they won a home game.
Yeah. Nicely done.
There you go.
1985.
I had some votes for the 76 team.
76, and how about 85?
More than my share of votes for the 2007 team.
Really? Oh yeah, just the 16 and 0. Yeah.
Very, very adamant about 2007. Basically, I had one follower who told me everybody else was wrong for not picking 2007, which is an amazing analysis when this is an opinion poll.
Well, you can certainly, it is a great analysis, and you can certainly make an argument that 07 team was the best Patriots team of all time. They just didn't win.
That's the beauty of what you're doing here. I mean, two cases in history always come up to me when people discuss great teams. It's obviously two franchises that have had success. You know, obviously the 1972 Dolphins are the only team to go perfect.
Right.
But many people who follow football and follow the game itself will tell you that the 73 Dolphins were actually a better football team.
Interesting.
More dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, you know, people, it's funny, people love to talk about the 72 Dolphins, and then they yet always like to throw in the fact that they had an easy schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about the 73 Dolphins, there was nothing easy. I mean, they smashed the teams in the playoffs, the Bengals, the Raiders, and the Vikings. They were 12-2. You know, like I said, obviously lost a couple of games, but they were a more mature football team. They were in their third straight Super Bowl.
Right.
And then another example that always comes up is the 1976 Pittsburgh Steelers. Obviously, the Steelers won the 4 Super Bowls in 6 years, John, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
And in 76, they got off to a terrible 1-4 start. And then when you say these stats, it's still almost mind-blowing. They won their last 9 regular season games and won the division. In their last 9 games that year, they gave up a total of 28 points.
Got it. That's phenomenal.
They gave up 2
that's phenomenal.
Touchdowns in 9 games. And both of them came in 1 game. And they pitched 5 shutouts.
See, to me, that's every bit as good as, you know, the alleged Bears defense of 85. You know, given that kind of, that's phenomenal. And I'm glad you brought it up because people just don't remember that defense. But that was a dominant, dominant defense.
Oh, it was absolutely. And the thing about the Steelers defense, of course, is that defense was together for a long time,
mm-hmm.
too. And I mean, it's a different era now. It's harder to keep units together. That's why you see what Baltimore did in 2000, and you just marvel at it.
Right.
The fact that they played 20 games that year and didn't give up 200 points.
Which is amazing,
It's just astounding. And you don't see those defenses anymore. Now you see more opportunistic defenses around the league, and those have been the teams, the Saints, the Packers, last year's Ravens that have propelled those teams to Super Bowls along with, you know, effective offense.
That's cool. I'm going to assume then that the 72 Dolphins outpolled the 73 Dolphins for best Miami team.
Okay. But, yeah, I mean they won substantially. I mean it's hard, you know, like I said, it's beating perfection is obviously tough, but there was certainly sentiment for 84 with Dan Marino's big year in 84 when they got to the Super Bowl and lost to the Niners, but they were 14-2 and scored a boatload of points and he threw his 48 touchdown passes and you know, it's generational. It's what you remember. And that's what makes the poll fun. And, you know, I've made this point, and I don't know if I made it to you, that you know, the way social media is now, sometimes I'll get people on here, I'll say, well, this isn't a fair representation because it's the Twitter crowd. Well, you know, wake up, everybody. The Twitter crowd is not just 20-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
It's how a lot of people communicate for business now.
Sure.
And so it's 30 and 40. And I can tell you that the fan base on the followers that I have, just the Packer fans alone are people who are in their 50s and 60s and 70s who follow me.
Wow.
And talk, you know, about Jerry Kramer and talk about Don Hudson and et cetera, et cetera. And it's with a lot. I mean, I've got, you know, I love the group of followers I have on the timeline because they're really legitimate football fans. And a lot of them are big time historian fans and a lot of industry people as well. And the dialogue that goes on, I know it's 140 characters, but the dialogue that goes on, especially during the voting things. I mean, we've done greatest player in the team's history.
Mm-hmm.
And we also even did the best Twitter fan for every team. And now we're making our way up backwards alphabetically because I did everything else alphabetically. So I had to be fair to the Redskins.
Right.
Since they were always last, Washington. So we're going backwards, and tomorrow will be the Colts. I'm sorry, tomorrow will be the Colts, and then we'll do Houston, and then we'll do the Packers in a couple of days.
Interesting. In terms of best
13 title teams, be my guest. Figure that one out.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a lot. That's absolutely a lot. All right, so you can find then, if you haven't been keeping up, you have the best teams for each franchise on ProFootballGuru.com, correct?
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. And if you... In fact, if you tweet me right now, I'm not going to send you something that makes Julian fries. but if you tweet me right now, I'll tweet it directly to you.
Perfect.
I'll tweet you the list right to you.
Perfect. See, there you go.
How's that for chumming?
I think that's pretty good.
There you go.
See, I've been trying to get people to get me up there over the last couple of days, and it's actually slowly going better than it has, so I'm actually pleased with that. So that's why I wanted to thank you for the follow Friday mentions that I get. I appreciate that.
Well, I can't thank you enough for 13 years, and I mean that because I have a blast doing this with you every year.
It's a lot of fun every week. In fact, this is definitely the high water part of the week for me. Because I get to sit here and talk football for as long as you'll let me, anyway. All right, so let's start then this week with the Thursday night game. The Panthers playing at the Buccaneers. I wasn't going to bring this up, but I always feel like I need to because it's the game that's tonight. And so it's the game that kind of gets us started on the weekend. But, you know, I think they've mutinied in Tampa, haven't they already?
Yeah, how convenient, too, you know, when you have a Jolly Roger in your own stadium.
Yeah, just it's perfect for a mutiny right there. And I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure they.
Unfortunately, at 0-6, there's been no bounty.
Yeah, no, or booty, one or the other.
Yeah. But I'm fascinated tonight because Carolina, to me, was a team that I had in the playoffs before the season started.
Yes.
And for a change, they're not 1-5 after six games. And I know that sounds like sarcasm, but that is actually what their record had been after six games each of the previous 3 years. 1-5, 1-5, 1-5. This year they're 3-3, and two numbers I think you might find fascinating, John. They've given up a total of 17 points in the first half of six games this year.
Total in the first half?
Total. And here's the breakdown. Five field goals and a safety. Notice I didn't say touchdowns. The Carolina Panthers have not given up a touchdown in the first half this season.
That's kind of incredible.
And you look at their defensive personnel, and, you know, here's a team that could afford to trade John Beeson a couple of weeks ago to the New York Giants.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a team. Now, offensively, they're still a little sporadic. And last year, they lost to the Buccaneers twice, as a matter of fact. So this is a very, very big game for Carolina because they are 3-3, like I mentioned. They're only two games behind the Saints. But more importantly, what's fascinating for Carolina, this is their first divisional game all year. They're the only team, I believe, in the league that hasn't played a game within their own division yet. I might be wrong on that. But so what I'm telling you is they have 10 games left, and six of them are against the Falcons, the Saints, and the Buccaneers. So this is really very, very key for them. And if they can notch at least one or two maybe divisional road wins, that would be huge. Remember, this division last year was won by the Falcons, 13-3. The other three teams finished 7-9, but all four teams last year finished 3-3 in the division.
That's
very bizarre.
Yeah, that is bizarre, especially to finish 13-3 and then 3-3 in the division.
The Falcons lost to everybody, one from A, one from B, and one from column C. They lost to the Buccaneers, they lost to the Saints, and they lost to the Panthers.
No true divisional winner then in that instance anyway.
Yes.
Okay, I have the undefeated, and I guess for lack of a better phrase, number one team in the NFL, the Kansas City Chiefs, at home against the Cleveland Browns this week. Almost seems unfair, but it looks like the Chiefs could get themselves to 8-0 and continue their march toward legitimacy when they get a chance in a few weeks to tackle Denver. Do they keep their jersey clean this week?
I think they do because that defense is playing lights out. They've given up 81 points in seven games. No team has gotten more than 17 on them in any game this year. 35 sacks already. I know they had 10 against the Raiders, but 35 in seven games. That's a pretty impressive total, where I think they're sitting at 19 takeaways in seven games. Not bad, but certainly very good considering last year's team had 13 all of last season. And Alex Smith hasn't been, you know, Mr. Turnover-free the last couple of games, the last three or four games. So they really are doing it as a team. He had a big rushing touchdown last week. Jamal Charles is certainly in the loop when it comes to maybe Offensive Player of the Year, maybe even an MVP candidate. But they're finding different ways to get it done. But defensively, they're just so consistent. And here come the Browns, which perfect balance. They've won three games, and they're starting their third different quarterback on Sunday.
Right. The number that I look at here, Russell, the combined one-loss record of the Chiefs' previous seven wins, 15-33.
Yeah, there's absolutely no question about it. But that always, to me, that's the intriguing part when you look at that schedule at the start of the year. Think about this, John. Oh, wow, we get to play the Chiefs twice. They were 2-14.
Yeah, right. Hasn't quite turned out that way, has it?
Yeah, but
hasn't
and you
quite
know how the schedules are figured. They're figured by combined win-loss total.
Yeah, and so they're gonna be matched up with some of the bottom feeders from the other division. So, again,
here's the thing to keep in mind about the AFC West. Last year, Denver won 13 games. The Chiefs, the Raiders, and the Chargers combined win 13 games.
Yeah.
All I know is Denver is 6-1, and now they're a second-place team in that division.
That's correct. Yep, that's right. You can
and
only,
the Chargers are 4-3.
You can only play the games the NFL tells you you got to play. So
absolutely.
I usually don't buy into the whole strength of schedule argument because it's not even.
Not in pro football.
No, it's not even in pro football.
Not in pro football, but I do miss. There's rumor out there that the AFC West as a division is going to send a collective thank you card to the NFC East for playing them this year.
Probably so. And I think they probably should.
Boy, if they whipped up on the NFC East.
Yep. Pretty much. Speaking of the NFC East, Dallas Cowboys, the de facto division leaders right now, pretty interesting game on Sunday. They get to go to Detroit to take on the also 4-3 Detroit Lions. This one, to me, even though it's only 7 weeks into the year, this one has playoff implications for on down the line somewhere.
Oh, I think very much so. And the similarities between these teams, as I was writing in Cold Hard Football Facts, is crazy. You know, Tony Romo and Matthew Stafford have both thrown 15 touchdown passes. Dez Bryant and Calvin Johnson have both caught 6 touchdown passes. Obviously, both teams have won 4 games. Both teams are +5 in turnover differential. But I think the one thing I pointed out as a little bit of tongue-in-cheek was there was a disparity. I mean, just when you were thinking everything was even, there was a disparity between the two teams because the Dallas Cowboys are 29th in total defense and Detroit is 31st.
Right. Wow. I didn't realize Detroit was that low. I knew that they were low, but I didn't realize they were next to last.
Yeah, well, pass defense still an issue for them. The occasional pass rush, but mediocre against the run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have the pass rushers that they had. I mean, losing Cliff Averill and letting Kyle VandenBosch go, that's why they went out and got Ziggy Ansah in the draft. And they're solid up the middle with Fairley and Sue, obviously. And I thought the Glover Quinn pickup in the secondary was big time. But they still haven't learned to beat the Packers, which continues to be a problem with them. And some of those numbers, remember, they were blowing the Bears out and wound up winning 40-32. But, you know, you can move the ball on them. They're an exciting team to watch. I think the other number that, and I hope I'm not getting the stats mixed up, you want to talk about closeness, because DeMarco Murray is expected to play this week. And when DeMarco Murray gets his share of carries, the Dallas Cowboys are a different football team. There's absolutely no question about it. They need that balance. That's why you give up 51 points. You give up 30. You think about the games they lost this year and the ton of points. Now, Kansas City lost 17-16, but Dallas has given up an awful lot of points, and you know that banged up defensive line doesn't help them any. Although mystifying that with all those guys missing last week, they wind up holding Philadelphia to a field goal. But talk about closeness. DeMarco Murray's got 428 yards rushing.
Yep.
And Reggie Bush has 426.
Yep. And two pretty outstanding backs.
Overtime tie written all over it.
Yeah, that's a good. I think this could be one of the more entertaining games of the week, which is why I wanted to bring it up today. Within the division.
I'll tell you what I also think.
Yeah.
This is maybe one of those games down the road. And again, we don't know what's going to happen. The NFC, I know Dallas has got a 4-3 record, but Washington is 2-4 and not that far out of it.
That's also true.
Hey,
the Giants are only 3 games back. Come on.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's a long way to go in this, and I bring this up because this is one of those games that maybe down the road later in the year when you start looking at tiebreakers and head-to-head, Dallas won in Detroit.
Yeah.
Or Detroit beat Dallas.
Yeah, we're on the same wavelength here. That's why I thought this would be a good game to look at.
Absolutely.
All right, in the division, the two Patriot conquerors face off this week. Jets at the Bengals. I just don't know if the Jets are in the Bengals class, although I got to give the Jets a lot of credit for really, honestly, kind of out-coaching the Patriots a week ago.
Well, it was, you know, if you go back and you look at the very first game when they played each other on that Thursday night, the one thing that the Jets were able to do, and I know Geno Smith threw the 3 interceptions in the fourth quarter,
yeah,
but the Jets were able to run fairly respectfully on the Patriots end. They ran for 129 yards, and that's with Will Fork and Mayo in the lineup. And I think eventually that just took a toll on that depleted defense. The one thing also about the Jets, their defensive line. I mean, you know, for people who don't know about Sheldon Richardson, the rookie, but even more so Muhammad Wilkerson.
Muhammad Wilkerson was a man among boys.
Defensive player of the year candidate.
Yeah.
He has been a terror absolutely all season. Defensively, they come after you. And also they stifle you against the run. That's a pretty potent front seven with a lot of former first-round picks who are starting to gel. But speaking of potent front sevens, Geno Atkins, Michael Johnson, Carlos Dunlap, the Bengals ain't too shabby themselves. So maybe we'll see a steel cage sumo match or an MMA match between the two group of defensive linemen. That would be a lot of fun.
Would be. I tend to favor the Bengals only because they're at home in this one. But I actually like the Bengals defensive line a little bit better than I like the Jets defensive line, and I like both of them.
Yeah, it is hard not to like either one, but I agree with you. And this is it would be a feather in the cap of the Jets to go and beat the Bengals in Cincinnati. There's no question about it. But to me, it's a very important game for the Bengals because, you get the feeling you're still going to hear from Baltimore. And you almost get the feeling you still might hear from Pittsburgh, too.
Yeah.
In the AFC North.
Yeah. Wouldn't shock me.
The last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me. Steelers are on the road this week at the Raiders. If they can win that and make it three in a row, you'd have to say the Steelers are back in the mix.
Yeah, again, because the way these divisions are bunched up, there's no question about it. But I bring up the Bengals situation with this. They just went on the road the last 2 weeks and won two 27-24 games on the last play of the game, one in overtime against Buffalo and then one against the Lions in Detroit. So to come up and win two road games and then come home and lose, it's a little bit of a buzzkill, for lack of a better word. You know, it's almost like the Eagles last week. They had beaten the Redskins in Washington. They had beaten the Giants at MetLife Stadium, 2-0 in the division on the road, and then they come home and lose to the Cowboys.
Right, right.
So if you can stay one up in those regards, you know, if you win, it's simple. If you win all your home games or go 7-1 and then go 4-4 on the road, you're going to be an 11-win club.
Yep, pretty amazing. Jets also, I think if they can get a win here, they legitimately stamp themselves, I think, as playoff contenders this year.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree with that statement more.
That's a big one for the Jets. Also in the division, the Bills, they get to actually take another Patriot opponent, the Saints. They go to New Orleans to take on the Saints. Now the Bills are 3-4, so I don't want to say that they're complete slackers. They did beat Miami last week. Now, I don't know that they got enough to beat the Saints, but at least beating Miami as they did, which is a bit of a surprise, opened my eyes, especially the way they went about doing it.
Yeah, you know, Mario Williams, is sitting there with 10 sacks all of a sudden. So early in the year, but I think he's had like 5.5 sacks in his last four games. Kiko Alonso, we talked about him, the rookie middle linebacker.
Yep.
Aaron Williams, the second or third year corner, who's been very solid for them. And done it now, with another quarterback and Thaddeus Lewis as they wait for EJ Manuel to get healthy. But yeah, I mean, this is a team. We always talk about how the Bills don't fare well in the division, and they won a road divisional game last week. And, mm-hmm. and obviously, it's a tall order to go against a Saints team that'll be well rested coming off its bye. But, the Saints also might not have Jimmy Graham. And that might change their offense dramatically.
Well, that would dramatically. I think it would change it completely. And that would also give the Bills at least a snowball's chance in you-know-what down in New Orleans.
Well, absolutely. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. It's just kind of odd. Well, isn't it funny that with all those Bills Super Bowl appearances, they didn't play a Super Bowl in New Orleans?
Yeah. Amazing.
In fact, they have not played at the Superdome. Unfortunately, because of Hurricane Katrina, this is the first time the Bills are playing at the Superdome since 1998.
That's a long time. Yeah,
right. Well, I'll make sure I don't, because remember the Saints had so many different homes during Katrina. I can't remember if they played the Saints in San Antonio or LSU, but they did not play them in New Orleans in 2005 because of Katrina.
Hmm.
So it's been a while since they've been down there.
Well, that's maybe that means then that they'll party on Bourbon Street and give the Saints a de facto home win. You never know.
Well, hey, there's There's home field advantage, and then there's home field advantage.
Oh, and I think the New Orleans definitely has one of the best ones in the league. I mentioned the Steelers at the Raiders just a little while ago, and I'll bring up the Steelers now because that's next week's opponent for New England. But here's a team now that started 0-4, has won their last two. You'd think that they'd have a reasonable opportunity to make it three straight and legitimately come into the Patriot game on a roll and back in the thick of things, as we just talked about within their division.
Yeah, this is a tricky game for them. They lost to the Raiders last year out in Oakland. You know, Darren McFadden had a big day. Carson Palmer had a big day against them. Listen, Mike Tomlin's team, still not scoring a lot of points, 19 against the Jets, 19 against the Ravens. Didn't have any takeaways again last week. But what was fascinating to watch him against Baltimore, 19 actually proved to be a very interesting number for Pittsburgh. Their longest play from scrimmage, either running or passing last week against the Ravens, was 19 yards. They didn't have a 20-yard play. And yet they methodically, after Baltimore tied the game, came down the field and kicked a field goal to win it. And that was huge for them. Obviously, you know, the difference between 2-4 and 1-5 is monumental. And, you know, when you go 0-4, you spend a month trying to get back to 500. But, again, the Steelers have two road games coming up. You already mentioned Oakland Sunday, and of course you said New England already as well. You know, I think it's imperative for them, for even the Patriots game to mean something next week, that they don't go into New England a little demoralized off a loss. But Oakland has proven, and they beat San Diego a couple weeks ago, that they're certainly capable.
Yes, they are. They are. All right, so then that's got to bring us to our game on Sunday afternoon. We get the 1 o'clock tip-off, kickoff, whatever it is. See, I've already got basketball in the brain here a little bit, so my apologies there.
I'm surprised you didn't give me a World Series reference.
Well, so. That's also your first pitch, 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon, right? Patriots and the Dolphins. Now, you know, it comes to me as a little bit weird, and I talked a little about this last week to nobody in particular, but, you know, you finish your series with the Jets before you even get a chance to face off with the Dolphins once. Normally this is a game that, you know, when you get up here, you like to think, well, maybe it'll be earlier in the season, and here we are about the midway point of the year before you get a chance to play Miami, and then you'll, of course, go down there a little bit later in the year. But this is a Dolphins team that started 3-0, Russell, and they've lost 3 in a row, and they lost maybe a game last week they shouldn't have. And lost it to Buffalo. And so now you've got the Dolphins questioning themselves. You've got the coaching staff questioning themselves. You've got the media on top of them, you know, trying to, you know, question whether or not Joe Philbin is the coach everybody thought he was cut out to be. And you got a quarterback that just cannot, absolutely cannot stay protected. Sounds a little like what we got going on in New England.
Yeah, Ryan Tannehill sacked 26 times already in 6 games. And as you saw, Miami made a move to get Bryant McKinney.
Yep.
From the Baltimore Ravens. Yeah, it's been an interesting offseason if you're an offensive tackle.
Sure.
Eugene Monroe goes from Jacksonville to Baltimore. Levi Brown goes from Arizona to Pittsburgh, although he didn't play for them. He wound up getting hurt. And now McKinney, I guess we're continuing to show how important the quarterback is in this quarterback-driven league. But again, 26 sacks. Jonathan Martin has struggled as the left tackle, coming over from right tackle to replace Jake Long. He's given up 6 sacks. They couldn't find anyone to fill the right tackle spot for a lot of the offseason. They wound up getting Tyson Klebo, who's cut by the Falcons. I think he's given up 8 sacks, if you go by the numbers of Pro Football Focus, who do a great job breaking down the game. So, you know, there's 14 sacks from the tackle spots, and they've given up 26. So, they, you know, obviously that's a problem area. They have not run the ball with any kind of authority twice in 6 games this year. The Miami Dolphins have been held below 25 yards rushing, which is almost astounding even in this day and age. Defensively, they've been okay, but they haven't been lights out where they need to be lights out. I think they got humbled in New Orleans a little bit. Same thing in the Ravens game. And they've lost a couple of close ones now here at home. Baltimore by 3 and the Bills by 2. And you're right, 3-0 for the first time in 11 years, and now 3-3 all of a sudden. And there were a lot of high hopes in Miami this year. You know, I'm not saying their season is over, but I unfortunately think they are going to slip below 500 because I think they're going to they're going to run into a very aroused New England team.
Yeah, we've been talking about that obviously here this week as well, that the Patriots are probably a little PO'd, the fact that they let themselves they let themselves get into a position where they could blow the game, and they did last week against the Jets. They'll probably be sufficiently motivated this week. However, I give the Dolphins a couple of shots here. Number one, because the defense is banged up to the point where they allowed a Jets team to score 30, a Jets team that had only scored 30 once in its last 16 games before last week, and because the Patriots themselves on offense held under 300 yards, and Tom Brady held to less than 50% completion for two times in three games. So I'm wondering which trend is actually going to rear its ugly head here.
In fact, I went back and looked this up, unless I missed something, but I think it was the first time that a Rex Ryan Jets team had ever scored 30 against the Patriots.
Yeah, I believe that's the case, yes. Yes,
yeah,
I believe that is the case.
It was, and, of course, there were two pick sixes in there, one of them by Brady and one of them by Geno Smith.
Yep.
But, yeah, I just think this is the wrong time for the Dolphins to run into the Patriots, who they don't fare very well against anyway. I'll be interested to see how much time Chandler Jones spends in the Miami backfield, maybe more than Lamar Miller. Fortunately for Ryan Tannehill, Brandon Gibson, who they got from the Rams in free agency, has been pretty solid, because Mike Wallace, who they signed from Pittsburgh, has been an absolute enigma this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you have a deep threat, but you can't get him the ball, or you don't even target him. That is a little bit strange.
It's strange, and it also goes to show you that one of their big free agent pickups, who they were counting on, Dustin Keller. Remember, they lost him during the preseason?
Yes, they did, yeah.
I think that, you know, we said it was a bigger loss than people thought. I think that's panning out.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so the Patriots and the Dolphins, 1 o'clock kickoff. We're all very happy for the 1 o'clock kickoff time around here. Trust me on that one. Russell, as always, it's great to visit with you. Thank you for the time and the knowledge, and I'll look forward to it always again next week.
You got it, John.
Thank you, man. All right, Russell Baxter, don't forget, follow him at BaxFootballGuru on Twitter. Got the Twitter thing going today. Got the Twitter thing definitely going today. So there you go. Russell's great at this stuff, isn't he? He's got more knowledge of the numbers, you know, in and around the game of pro football than any other person.
He spit out a pretty cool tidbit to me, too, and this is just because I'm dorky and I like football. But
yeah.
We were talking about the kind of the stigmatism of how people say you can't beat a team three times in 1 year.
Right.
And how, you know, how a lot of Patriots fans hem and haw if they end up playing the Jets in the playoffs. Just that, you know. Statistically speaking, the team, like when a team that's beaten a team twice already in 1 year plays that third time in the playoffs, they're like something like 75% or something like that, beating the team again a third time. And then he pointed out to me that the Pittsburgh Steelers, John, have never lost a divisional game in the playoffs. They're 9-0 against the AFC North in the playoffs whenever they played the Bengals or the Ravens or whomever. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, this
is something like
this stuff just comes off the top of his head.
So we're just talking on the phone.
He doesn't look this stuff up.
No, we're just talking on the phone about random stuff, and he just comes up with this off the top of his head.
The man has an encyclopedic knowledge of the NFL.
He's crazy.
And for those that are not aware, and I've introduced him before, but those who have followed and listened to this program for a number of years know that Russell and I first met when we both worked at ESPN. And when I was at ESPN Radio, and he was doing both radio and television at ESPN, but he wasn't on the air. He was the chief researcher for the National Football League at ESPN.
He was the guy that made all the pretty people look like they knew what they were talking about.
You know,
that's what Russell.
When you watch, the Sunday show, NFL Countdown, whatever it is, he's the guy in the ear of, you know, Chris Berman and Mike Ditka and Tom Jackson and all the guys on the desk. He was the guy in the ear spouting out all that stuff that those guys are giving. You're saying, "Oh, hey, that's pretty good. That guy's smart." No. No.
No, Russell's
smart. No, Russell's the one that's smart because Russell was the one in their ears telling them all this stuff. That's how smart Russell is. Russell's, and I've always said this about Russell when he was with ESPN. He was a victim of their cutbacks a couple of years ago. If you wonder why he's not there anymore, you know, ESPN, if you've, you know, follow the, you know, television traded all over the last few years, you know, they've, cut back on their workforce significantly, over the last 2 years, especially. And Russell was one of the first to go, I think about three, 4 years ago. In fact, they just this last year fired Howie Schwab, you know, stumped the Schwab. You remember him? He's another great guy. But unfortunately, Russell was the NFL version of Howie, knowing everything.
And they randomly, I remember in the spring, you and I were talking about it off here, they fired like 400 people on a random day.
Just a random day. You were done. Yeah, they just said, you know, they gave 400 people their pink slip there in their Bristol, Connecticut campus. But Russell's job, 365 days a year, was the NFL. And he was the only person in Bristol, Connecticut, at the worldwide leader, or the self-proclaimed worldwide leader, whose job was the National Football League 365 days a year. That's how important he was to the network and to the league, vice versa. And then, of course, they decide, oh, well, he's been here for a while. He's expendable, as it happens, unfortunately, in this day and age. So we're very happy that, you know, we were able to, you know, keep him around, at least here within the playbook. And I'm very pleased, because he's such a good friend, very pleased to see that he's been able to, you know, kind of carve out a cottage industry of pro football for himself by launching his own site, profootballguru.com, and then also picking up writing gigs for several outlets, not the least of which would include Yahoo Sports, Cold Hard Football Facts,
Bleacher Report, I think.
Bleacher Report. Yeah, I think he also does stuff for Pro Football Focus. So, yeah. I mean, he's all over the place now, and he's starting to monetize that. I'm very happy about
it. A great follow, like you mentioned on Twitter.
Great follow on Twitter. If you haven't followed him on Twitter, you really should. And I hope that a lot of, you know, listeners to this show and a lot of listeners to PFW, and you follow Patriots.com, you should be following Russell, because he will make you smart, and he will win you battles at the water cooler, and he will win you trivia questions at the neighborhood bar and grill. That's how good he is. So there you go. Don't know how I can explain it any better than that. All right, back to the predictions here for the last 10, 15 minutes of the program before we wrap it up on Prediction Thursday. Mary Beth on Facebook says 30-24 Patriots over the Dolphins. Michael says, here goes in hopes of the media guide, Prediction Thursday, Patriots win 30-24. I kid you not, Mary Beth. Same score. The home crowd helps win by causing a few key mistakes by the Finns. The offense will be better on third down, but will be forced to make a few field goals. I kind of agree with that assessment, Michael. I actually do. Dave on Facebook writes, prediction, Pats 27, Dolphins 13. I think Brady had probably been pretty hard on himself after last week's performance, and is going to come out of the typical Brady fashion that we have had the luxury of being spoiled with over the past decade. You know, I've heard people saying that Gronk's drops were horrible. Well, the fact of the matter is, he had a hell of a debut game, putting up over 100 yards on offense. You know, I didn't think it was horrible. One of them was a one-handed grab. The other one, he was looking back into the sun. So, no, not horrible. He is only going to improve every week. I put Gronk with two TDs and 125 yards. Looking forward to the division win. Alan on Facebook says, Pats 27, Finns 23. Closer. Patriots will struggle to stop the underneath passes, meaning the Finns will convert some third downs and get to the red zone a few times. Also, there will be at least one big TD pass from outside the 20. But the D holds them to 23. Gronk will have knocked off that rust on the Mendola. Will be open because of the attention to Gronk that he'll get. And the way I see it, if we can put 20 up on the New Jersey Jesters, who have a very good defense, then we should just about put 27 on the Dolphins. But the O-line needs to do a better job protecting Brady. Pretty well thought out there, Alan. Pretty well thought out. Hard to argue with any of those right there. Okay, let's get now back to the email as well. I had a lot on the email. And Jeff in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada. Nice one. All right, here we go. Going with Patriots to win 27-20. Everything's telling me that this will be more than a 7-point game, but divisional battles just always seem to be a little closer than expected. And besides Tampa Bay, New England just isn't blowing anyone out so far this season. 27-20 it is. Thank you, Jeff. Josh from Stratford, Connecticut says, John, I'm just wondering your input on why we have picked up Colley and still haven't even given Boyce a shot. I think he's got potential, definitely has the speed. You know, Josh, I don't know that I can sufficiently answer that. the couple of times that that question has been broached, it's been kind of like, well, we just, you know, feel like he can offer us more at this point in time. And in fact, specifically asked about Josh Boyce, it's like, well, he hadn't been active. And there's been no reason for his inactivity other than the fact that they feel like, I think, a guy like Austin Colley is probably better prepared to contribute right now as opposed to contribute next year or beyond. Only reason I can give you. I don't know that they've given up on Josh Boyce. I hope they haven't because, like you, I do think he has the speed. I'm a little curious as to why they haven't tried him in the kick return game. That one befuddles me, but at the same time, I think it probably comes down to a numbers game. You can only activate 45 in a given week, and because, you know, they're trying to go with guys in kick return that are also contributing elsewhere. And I guess Josh Boyce isn't contributing as much special teams or even with enough reps on offense. He was inactive last week, so that probably answers the question right there. Jose on Long Island says, John, what can I say? I told you last week that I was afraid, and it did happen. We lost, but this week I feel different. The Pats will win this game 27-20. The offense will continue to struggle. The defense, even with the injuries, will find a way to win the game. Thank you for the show. You guys made my week. Thank you, Jose. You helped make our week when you contribute. Appreciate that. This one comes from Vivek, who says, John, great show so far as usual. If you look at the first three Dolphins wins, I would say Whedon sucks for the first win. Maybe a legit win with sloppy play early from the Colts for the second win. Atlanta definitely is atrocious, explains the third win. All three Dolphins losses have come from strong defensive squads. Dolphins have not broken three TDs in a game yet, I don't think. Pats need this win or else the situation is grim. Could not agree more. Pats D may be a little hurt, but it's still elite in my opinion, even with the pieces missing. So he says, I predict a 27-17 win. Seems to be popular. I should have skewed it a little bit, Kev. I should have said 26-17. You know, don't you think? That would have been a little bit better, right? Three touchdowns, three field goals for the Patriots. Ah. No, I'll stick with 27-17. That's what I said. So I'll stick with it. But I should have gone with a weird number. It's still covering the spread anyway. Still have, you know, Patriots are 7, and I've got them covering by a field goal. All right, Vivek, good stuff. Zach in Medford, Mass. Is 27-20 Patriots. A lot of 27-20s and a lot of 31-17s today. John, I think Brady will bounce back this week with 300 yards, three touchdowns, two of them to Gronk. So I see it 34-17 Pats. As far as Super Bowl aspirations, the one thing we have going for us is no one is unbeatable in the NFL, especially in the NFC. Denver is coming back to earth before our eyes. They have serious defensive issues. We need to grind this regular season out, get a bye somehow, beat Denver in the championship game. That's Austin in Toronto. Thank you, Austin. Howard in Shelton, Connecticut. Pats 30, Squish the Fish 17. Pats O-line has improved every game and keeps Brady clean most of the day. Pats run the ball at will on the Miami D. Pats D gets to Tannehill all day. Well, I hope that 1-3 happen, because if they do, then the Patriots will win by more than 30-17, Howard. I don't know if they can run the ball at will on Miami, but that might be one way that you will see on Sunday how the Patriots keep Brady clean is by trying to control the ball. I know one of the things that this team was expressly disgusted with last week in the loss to the Jets was the Jets' time of possession. Because of that, I think you will see the Patriots try to run the ball. Now, I don't know if they'll have any real success with it, but I do think you'll see the Patriots try to stick to some kind of ground game as long as they don't turn it over and give up any cheapies to the Dolphins to where they've got to throw the ball to come back. Jeff in Florida. Pats are mad. The floundering Dolphins will suffer. Nothing personal. He says 41-14 Pats. Wow. Okay. Michael in Stockholm, Sweden. My prediction for this game is that the Patriots will get a big lead early. Then a comeback by Miami. And they tie the game late in the fourth quarter. But with enough time left for Brady to get us into field goal range, Gostkowski makes the score 34-31 Patriots with time running out. Ah! It's just what we need, Michael. more agita here at Gillette. It's all we need is more agita. But thank you from Sweden today. And then our friend Steve in Killeen, Texas, he says, Pats 28, Fins 13. With key pieces back, I believe the Patriots will get it done. Pretty close to what E. Scal said. He said 28-12. And he says, I can work your social media promotion, John. Oh, nice. He says, work in progress. Need to know more about your Pats? Your winning move is the Rook, John Rook. I like that. John Rook, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. John.Rook on Facebook. Oh, sounds like he's got a little promo thing going here. I like that. Thank you, Stephen. I need all the help I can get. Social. I love social media. Like Russell said, I think it's a wonderful way to interact with fans and people who think like I do. And even if you don't think like I do, it's great to exchange thoughts, and it's great to exchange a little bit of, you know, who we are and what makes us who we are as football fans and as sports fans in general. And I kind of dig it. I really do. So I'm very happy for the followers that I have, and I hope more of you decide to follow along on Twitter and Facebook. Mary says, my guess is 30-18 Patriots. Pure speculation. Well, Mary, here's a secret for you. It's all speculation. But that's good. That's fine. I like it. She says, I'll be watching the Sox tonight. Can't stand the NFL channel and their commentators. Okay, fair enough. Especially on Thursdays. They've had some dog games. And then Bill says, Pats 31, Fins 24. If there's more than one winner, yes. Diehard Pats fan in San Diego. And, oh, what did you get for a cell phone? Well, thank you, Bill, for catching up on that a few weeks ago. Ended up going with the Samsung S4. Bigger screen. Liked it. Don't have to wear my glasses in order to see what I type. That's huge. Huge for me. I do like the apps. I like the camera. So, you know, I ended up with a Samsung. Not disappointed. Not disappointed. Thank you for that, Bill. Appreciate that. Yes, if there's one more than one winner, then we will award more than one yearbook. It's that simple. So there you go. That's why. But you can't win if you don't play. I think that's the saying for the lottery or whatever, right? Let's see, a couple of more here. Jordan says, the Fins ranked 29th in rushing yards. Do you think that bodes better for us, or did they get on track against our hobbled D? Actually, Jordan, I think that bodes well for us, in all honesty. Think that helps us? The Dolphins have shown a tendency to kind of shy away from rushing. Now, if I'm Miami, I'm looking at the middle of the Patriots' defense, I'm thinking, hey, well, maybe the Jets prove that you can pound away, which Chris Ivory did last week. So I'm certainly thinking that would be one way to keep, you know, a guy like Ryan Tannehill clean, is by keeping the ball out of his hands. And if you have some success, well, then keep doing it. So I'd be surprised if early, if the Dolphins didn't try to run the ball up the middle. And then Connor says on Twitter, he says 35-14 Pats. So he's got a big spread on that one as well. Did that run us out of time? Did I have another prediction here? Hold on. I think I got one more. Oh, goodness gracious. And now it has to, like, stall out on me here. Nope, that's it. All right, good. That wraps it up for this week. So thank you. Thank you very much. Obviously, Russell Baxter, profootballguru.com. Make sure you follow him at BaxFootballGuru. As long as we have the social media thing going today, BAX Football Guru. Our thanks to Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald, who covers the Dolphins. You can follow him on Twitter too, at Armando Salguero. A Football Nation is coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio, so you want to stick around for those guys because they'll get you ready for the weekend. They got some good fantasy stuff coming up as well, so stick around. They're coming up. Thanks to Kevin for a crack job this week as well. Thanks to E. Scal for his input. Pats and the Fins. Hey, we didn't hear from Flipper this week. Where's Flipper? Is he in there? All right. I just wanted to make sure he was still around. You're going down, Flipper. Going down on Sunday. Well, you must be a girl with shoes like that. She said you know me well. I've seen you a little sleeping at Joanna around the back of my hotel. Oh, yeah. Someone said you was asking after me. But I know you're best as a blagger. I said, tell me your name. Is it sweet? She said, my boy is dagger.
dance with me just for the hell of it.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.